Hello and welcome to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm Sam Bailey, the Radio Academy's managing director, kicking off this week's episode because Roisin's finally gone and got the Rona. She's taken a week off to recuperate, so get well soon, Roisin, and thank you for recording and editing this week's interview before you got sick. Each week in this podcast, we aim to learn from the best radio and podcast ideas being made in the UK by speaking to the people that make them happen. This episode, we're focusing on a project that's aiming to diversify classical music by shining a light on composers overlooked throughout history.
We don't want to think of classical music as being as finished or as being this very narrow set of things. For all the small number of well-known male composers who've been played over the years, there's a whole community of people around them who are trying things out at the time.
I call it exploding the canon so that we can have more room for other stuff. Get the fusty, dusty stuff out and put some stuff in that really is useful and matters.
By telling the stories of seven overlooked composers, BBC Radio 3 aims to unearth their forgotten work and diversify their output by adding their music to the station's playlist. For this episode, Roisin spoke to one of the project's researchers, Michael Harper, along with Amelia Parker, who was a producer on the project, and Radio 3's controller, Alan Davey, who started their chat by giving a more detailed explanation.
At Radio 3, we're really anxious to kind of expand the canon of classical music and don't like to accept it as it is. And a few years ago, we did a project with the Arts and Humanities Research Council on female composers. We identified a bunch of female composers who'd fallen out of, you know, musicians or music commentators' spotlight, who we thought were worthy of further investigation, producing scores of their works to enable performances to happen. And then the performances did happen. And those composers are now just part of Radio 3's mainstream and classical music's mainstream. One of them was Florence Price, who now every orchestra is discovering, which is a brilliant, brilliant thing. And then we had a meeting at the Royal Northern College of Music about diversity in classical music more generally. And we were grappling with all kinds of very fundamental questions. And then we decided, well, let's do something with the AHRC to look at unjustly forgotten composers, and we can unpack why they were forgotten and who they were forgotten by from black and minority ethnic backgrounds. And that's how the project began. We've had one set of performances earlier this year, and there's another set of performances to come. And once they're out there and recordings are available, that means we can start using it as part of our everyday shows on Radio 3. And these composers will be there again in the public gaze. People won't bat an eyelid. They'll just say, this music's really interesting, and appreciate it for what it is. And that's the long-term aim.
It's amazing that the project at the minute, the backstory to getting this music made and recorded by the Philharmonic Orchestra, is so huge, and it's groundbreaking. It's rewriting, well, not rewriting history, but re-justifying history.
Or correcting
history. And eventually
history.
It's just correcting history, yeah. And eventually it will become part of a playlist that isn't even questioned, as it shouldn't be in the first place.
Yep, that's the aim. And we just need our marvellous researchers to do their work. And
yeah, I was going to say, Michael, you've been brought into this project as a researcher. Is your background more one of a scholar? Have you done much work with radio before?
Well, I did do an Edison Fellowship at the British Library some years ago on Samuel Coleridge Taylor. And I did start a doctorate in Cincinnati at the College Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati, but I left to pursue my career because I was kind of fed up with academia and wanted to sing. So my main area was being a singer and a singing teacher, and I was minding my own business at the Royal Northern College of Music. Well, that's not quite true, because I was stirring things up, saying, why isn't this curriculum more diverse? And Professor Barbara Kelly, who's in charge of research at the Royal Northern, said to me, oh, there's this AHRC BBC grant coming up. You should apply for it. And when you're teaching, you have so many things to do. There's really not any time to do these things. But and you have to have life as well. So no one tells you when you're going to do research that there is life as well. You know, they pretend that there's this wonderful bubble of research and this pot of money and you get on with it. Doesn't work that way. So I was minding my own business and she said, why didn't you apply for this? So I thought, well, who could I promote? And Julia Perry came to mind because I'd heard her Stabat Mater, and she was a pretty prominent composer in the 1950s and 60s, early 60s.
Let's learn about our third composer, Julia Perry, who died in 1979. Michael, who was she?
Well, Julia Perry was born in 1924 in Lexington, Kentucky, so right in the South. And she was a composer, a woman in the 1950s and 60s who transcended being just an African-American woman composer, as she would probably have been allotted in that time, to being a leading composer in the mid-20th century.
So let's hear an extract from her most popular orchestral work.
But she wasn't really in the mainstream for me because, of course, I never learned about her in graduate school or in undergraduate school, as I did not about any black composers except for Harry T. Burley, whose spirituals we occasionally sang. But that just shows you how the status quo is. The status quo is not inclusive. So this is part of this project to make it more inclusive. And to open up the canon. I call it exploding the canon so that we can have more room for other stuff. Get the fusty, dusty stuff out and put some stuff in that really is useful and matters.
You know, in this project, Radio 3 is challenging the canon of classical music by saying it's not finished. This isn't it in its entirety. We need to reflect it in all of its forms.
Yes. I mean, when I was nine, I had a teacher, Helen Palmer Howard, and she had on above the blackboard, do you remember blackboards?
Yes.
On one side, the visibles, and on the other side, the invisibles. On the side with the visibles were all of the white European people who had contributed something, who got credit for that contribution. And then on the other side were people of African heritage who had contributed something, but hadn't gotten credit for it, or at least publicly. For instance, there was a guy called Garrett Morgan, and he had invented what we now know as a traffic light, or the prototype for what we use now as a traffic light, also the gas mask. And so there were things like that that I would never have known as a little black child in Virginia, because our history was just about enslavement. That's all we learned about. And so those learning about these composers is really a boost for me, and also great information for all of my students at the Royal Northern College of Music, because they learn a more complete history with everybody included, and then they can see everybody around them as someone who might contribute to our social fabric, to our musical fabric, to everything around it. So it's really important for me to make these changes so that they don't get the same education that I got.
Amazing. What a thing to put your name to. So Michael, as you're researching the composer, you're finding out everything you can about them to bring their music back to life. So Amelia, what's your role in this then?
Well, I'm in the sort of the project team. We're based in Cardiff. I'm an assistant producer, and I work with colleagues to kind of liaise between our researchers like Michael and the wider BBC, the performing groups like the orchestras and the choirs and the new generation artists. So we're basically trying to move this forward and get this music recorded so that then we can play it as much as we can. So I suppose our job is a little bit logistical, but we've just really enjoyed getting to know the researchers and the composers' stories. But actually, you're right, I have been producing some stuff. I've been making two episodes of Free Thinking, which Michael was a guest on. So that was the first opportunity really for our champions to come forward and share the stories of their composers and also the stories of their research for the first time. but hopefully there'll be more of that to come.
So how does that work then? Because obviously when you start this project, you have your researchers like Michael going off and looking into these composers and, you know, finding out everything they can about them to bring their life back to work. You don't know how that's going to end.
No, absolutely. And then you throw COVID into the mix and everything goes a bit crazy. And that's sort of been the most... That's been the biggest challenge for us, definitely. I think all of our researchers have found that they haven't been able to necessarily get quite as far as they'd like to have been so far. And it's meant that we are a little bit behind in some ways, but that's thrown its own challenges up. And all our seven composers have different peculiarities. Some of them have, you know, the music had to go and be physically found in the archives. Some of them, they've had to complete the scores. They're, you know, there are either missing parts or things aren't so clear, having to make editorial decisions about the music. So each of them have their own idiosyncrasies, but that means it's really interesting, and they're all stylistically very different as well.
And then logistically, once the scores have been found and there's music there that can be recorded, do you hand that over to the Philharmonic Orchestra and let them do their thing, and then there's a big showcase of it all?
Yeah, our job is really to try and persuade all the different groups to have a look at this music and decide whether they've got the time in their schedule. we're trying to persuade everyone to get involved, really. And so far, yeah, currently we've been working with the BBC Phil, we've been working with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, the BBC Singers, and this list of groups is expanding all the time. So hopefully we'll get everybody involved at some point.
But the Philharmonic are going to do a big showcase concert. They're the ones setting off on the journey, and then we hope the others are going to take it up. And then other orchestras will take it up outside the BBC.
Exactly. That's the other thing. We're also working with publishers as well. We're trying to get publishers interested in the scores so that then groups beyond the BBC can make use of this music as well, which is even, you know, just as important that it gets a life beyond what we're doing as well.
Well, Claire Hammond's now joined us at the piano, so let's hear a prelude by Julia Perry, followed by Maidens Under the Moon by Kikuko Kanai.
Alan, how important is it that Radio 3 is working on projects like this where you are resurrecting music and bringing it back to life?
I think it's vital, because I think, you know, Radio 3, we don't want to think of classical music as being as finished or as being this very narrow set of things, because, you know, for all the kind of really the small number of well-known male composers who've been played over the years, there's a whole, you know, community of people around them who are trying things out at the time, doing different things, and all contributing to what music was at the time when they were making music. So seeing people in the wider context is really important. And what I know is that at Radio 3, we've got really curious listeners who want to discover things that for whatever reason they didn't know about. So, you know, they're happy coming in hearing Beethoven, but then here's something else. And this, for me, is a really important part of that mission, to show people there's something else that's there that adds context and depth to, you know, music of the 18th, 19th, 20th century, whatever it is.
And I'm sure as well there's also an ambition to broaden your audience as well. If you're offering more diversity in what you're able to put out on Radio 3...
It goes back to where this started, where people were saying to us, well, where are my role models as a composer? Because my role model isn't an old white bloke. I'm looking for a different kind of role model. And the role models are there in history. But we just need to bring them and show them and make the music available again. So there's tradition there to draw on. I think that's really important.
So, Amelia, for people that are interested in this and they want to get to know the whole backstory, they want to hear this music, how can they do that as part of Radio 3? Where do they find all this?
Well, if they want to know the stories, they should go and check out the two episodes of Free Thinking. They're both called Diverse Classical Composers. And there's two parts, and that way you can hear the stories of all seven of our composers. In terms of the music, the thing is, I mean, this stuff is being played all the time, just on breakfast, on all of the daytime shows. Now we have a massive resource that's growing all the time. It's cropping up a lot, but we have got another concert coming up in November, which will be a much bigger event, and we're going to hopefully have big performances from all of our composers that event. So that's something to listen out for in November.
And the concert that took place earlier this year, I know that we can't listen to it right now on BBC Sounds or anything, but what was the response to it at the time from listeners?
It was really positive from listeners and from the musicians who took part as well. And that, you know, people are curious.
That brings us nicely onto sort of reflecting on this project from each of you. What do you feel like you learnt from the project that you would like to pass on to our listeners if they're thinking of trying to do something ambitious like this, or they've got an idea? So if I could get one piece of advice from each of you just to round off the episode, please.
What would I say? Communication is key, especially when you're working with so many different people, keeping everyone in touch and letting everyone know what's happening, and then sharing this music as widely as possible.
You know, people will always say, well, it's too difficult, or is it worth it? Is anyone going to be interested? And I think, you know, there's enough interesting stuff there to be brought back to light and there is an interest there. There is a curiosity there. People want to know.
And Michael, as someone who doesn't have a radio background, I'm particularly interested to hear how you found working on this.
Well, I think the biggest thing for me was finding a team of people who were all interested in this project and having a great amount of patience.
Yeah, I think as a researcher especially, like, you've really got to commit to that, haven't you?
That's right. Especially with COVID, it was quite an interesting time trying to get things out of people. It was an interesting process for my first time doing a research project like this.
Thank you to Alan Davey, Amelia Parker and Michael Harper. And to Roisin Hasty, of course. Fingers crossed she'll be back with us next week when we'll be hearing from the team behind Jeremy Vine's show on Radio 2.
After one on the Jeremy Vine Show, are you a woman who was diagnosed with autism later in life? Our guest was diagnosed at 60. And we're going to catch up with our own Terry Walton on his allotment to see if it's Good Friday for the winter cauliflower.
That episode will be highlights of a live online event we're hosting on Thursday, the 21st of April at 5 p.m. Join us if you can. Details are on the Radio Academy website, where you can also watch more than 100 videos of live events if you're a Radio Academy member. Membership costs just £3 a month and is actually free for many people if your employer is a Radio Academy patron. As always, you can get in touch if there's a project you'd like us to feature on this podcast by emailing Roisin on podcast@radioacademy.org. Thanks for listening.